The entire movie looked like Dean Cundey came on it.
Radio Drone.
Welcome to another episode of Radio Drone. I am Josh Hadley. With me, as always, is the Peter.
Yes.
And showing up late, but he's here, the Cecil.
I got nothing.
No, you don't. And that's why you, of all people, because Peter can't, you should go to adamandeve.com. Use the promo code DROME, D-R-O-M-E, and you will get 50% off of a single item, 3 free DVDs, a free mystery gift, and free U.S. shipping. All you would have to do is use the promo code DROME at adamandeve.com. So last week we looked at 1992 in mainstream films. This week, especially now that Peter's here, we're going to look at 1992 in genre films.
And we had some interesting ones this year.
This is not a terrible year. There's some films I really
good,
hate,
actually.
But yeah, there's some really good films this year. What 1992 genre film jumps out at you?
Army of Darkness.
It was either going to be that or one other one that I'm kind of surprised you didn't
there,
pick.
This
but.
Year had some of my favorite genre films for sure. We had Peter Jackson's Dead Alive. We had Candyman. We had Pet
we'll
Sematary
get to
2.
Those. We'll get to those.
Well, yes, I'm just saying I'm listing off a lot of the good ones. We had Dust Devil. But the ones that stands out, the one that stands out for me, one that I've been watching since I was a kid and still frequently revisit is Sam Raimi's Army of Darkness, aka The Third Evil Dead. Features one of Bruce Campbell's most like charismatic performances. It's really fun. It's got some great stop motion-y skeleton effects. Army of Darkness is great, and it's usually the one I think of when I think to genre films that came out that year.
See, I like Army of Darkness, but I think it's the weakest of the three Evil Dead movies. Evil Dead 2 is my favorite, and then Evil Dead. I think this one it tried to change the formula too much, which in theory is not a bad thing.
It's the action movie of the series for sure.
Well, I think a lot of this one, you know, this one tried to be very humorous. A lot of the humor this time just didn't land for me.
Oh, boo.
Boo, it's hilarious.
Yes. Bruce Campbell is probably at his peak charismatic.
Just the bit where he's fighting the little versions of himself and they're calling him a dumbass and poking him with a pitchfork. The London Bridge is falling down. He steps on the nail.
Good, bad. I'm the guy with the gun. Wondering what I was going to go with. I was thinking, should I go with something more mainstream like Batman Returns, which I do love. It's like one of my favorite Batman movies.
Fantastic,
but,
yeah.
Oh, dude, it's so good. Like, I like the first one a lot, but I think Returns is just so much better.
Well, you got Danny DeVito as Penguin, you got Michelle Pfeiffer, just amazing as Catwoman, Christopher Walken, always charismatic.
Better.
Even Michael Keaton, I feel like really even amped up his performance, like he was slightly better in that one than he was in the first one.
Yeah, he like settled into the role, and he was actually really sad when he turned down the third one, because the third one was going in such a different direction without Burton, and he just didn't want to reprise his role. He was like, this isn't really what I had originally signed up for, and you know, with Val Kilmer, and if that's a whole other story. But I am going to go with the amazing Rutger Hauer movie Split Second.
Oh, hell yeah.
I mean, come on. You've got Detective Dick Durkin joining with Rutger Hauer in a time when global warming has left London flooded, and they're fighting what might be the devil. Oh, dude, it's so good.
The best thing about Split Second, and I agree with you, I do really enjoy it. Production design. It looks so good, man.
It does.
Oh, it's gorgeous. And the thing is, it's not an expensive movie. It was a $7 million movie. And it looks light years better than movies that cost way more than that. They nailed the production design, the aesthetic of it. They stuck with it. Everything looks wet. Everything, like, everybody just looks tired.
The entire movie looked like Dean Cundey came on it.
Yeah. But the design of the demon was just incredible. Like,
oh, that's so cool.
About it,
yeah.
It was so quotable. You had Pete Postlethwaite just as like the whipping boy, for lack of a better description. Oh, it's such a good movie.
Well, I'm going to go with a cheat. I'm going to go with Richard Stanley's Dust Devil, because it's no surprise how much of a Richard Stanley fan I am. But
I figured
I'm not,
that was the one you were going to go with.
But I'm not going to go with the 1992 cut, because that cut sucks. So the movie is amazing, but not the Weinstein version that was released in 1992. I think Dust Devil is one of the most poetic and beautiful horror films I've ever seen. I mean, on a visual level, this is one of the most beautifully shot movies I've ever seen.
Oh, absolutely. Dust Devil is amazing. It's fantastic.
And it's such a shame that the majority of people who saw it back in 1992 will never give it another chance, because they just think that the movie sucks. Once again, not knowing the whole Harvey Weinstein of it, the whole thing of him just completely gutting the film, changing so much of it, really just destroying it. And it's not until...
He dipped his dirty fucking dick in so many projects.
Yeah, he ruined...
A lot of people are unaware of how many movies he's actually ruined or helped to ruin.
I've had a lot of times where I talked about the remake of Black Christmas, where I talked about a whole bunch of films, and a lot of people are like, you know, once I found out that Weinstein was such a scumbag, I started looking into it and I started finding out. So I think that now people are starting to get wise to it, where if there was a movie from Miramax from that era that really sucked, there's a good chance that the original version was great. It's just that Weinstein decided to, throw his weight around and just alter it drastically. Dust Devil, it's such a great film. Richard Stanley version, not the Miramax version.
Well, but then you've also got things like Alien 3, which, okay, I loved Alien. I loved Aliens even more. I'm a huge fan of the Alien franchise. My girlfriend makes fun of me about how I know the specs of the weapons and the ships, and I've read all the comics, the books, the technical manuals, the role-playing games. I even read the novelization of Alien 3, because that came out a week before the movie. That movie fucking sucks. That movie is horrendous. Alien 3 is one of the worst movies of the 1990s. You could not have fucked a movie up more than you did with Alien 3. I do blame David Fincher, but I don't blame David Fincher. That's a whole different story. Alien 3 is one of the biggest middle fingers towards the fans of a franchise I've ever seen. It's one of the worst screenplays I think a major motion picture could have ever had for something released by a studio, and Alien 3 is one of the dumbest films of 1992, without a doubt.
Can't say I agree. I've always enjoyed Alien 3. Well, I mean, we've argued about it before. I just don't agree. I think it has a very good aesthetic. It's a very good looking film. It captures the feel of the first Alien, I feel like, very well. It's a little more dark, a little more grim. Everything's very dirty. Sigourney Weaver did an amazing job, as she usually does. Yes, it took a darker approach. We killed off Nuke and Nuke.
You've been watching a lot of RoboCop 2?
Yes, actually.
Wrong year for that,
a lot
though.
Of RoboCop 2. Newt and Michael Biehn's character, Space Kyle Reese.
Hicks,
yes. I'll just go with Space Kyle Reese. That's pretty much what he is. Ends up getting, and they end up dying in space, and the little facehugger comes out. They die in the crash. They end up on some prison garbage planet, and it's very awful because Ripley is now surrounded by rapists and serial killers and weird religious fanatics and stuff, and now we got an alien roaming around on that planet. I think thematically it's a very good idea, and I do think it's executed well, and for a directorial debut of a feature film, David Fincher did a really good job. I've always really very much enjoyed Alien 3. I completely understand why there's people who don't like it. I get that. I totally do. It does go against a lot of what the first two movies established, and obviously it's grim that they ended up killing off Newt and Hicks. And
I don't have a problem with the grim. It's one of the dumbest screenplays. The only reason this movie keeps moving along is every character makes the worst possible decision decision of all available options at any given moment. And then the screenplay constantly contradicts itself. And this isn't even about like deleted scenes. They literally, even in the director's cut, they have a scene like, we told you nothing here works. We have tons of flashlights and no batteries. And then it cuts to the next scene and they're all using working flashlights. And the screenplay was just like, yeah, you know what? Screw it. And the whole movie is like this. They set up something and then a minute later, they completely contradict it. The entire film. I mean, is it a surprise to anyone that the shooting script of Alien 3 has seven f***ing writers on it? You will never get a coherent screenplay when you have seven people writing it.
I don't know. I still find it enjoyable. I know that it's not perfect. I know it's got writing issues, but it's a hell of a lot better than Alien Resurrection.
I think that the concept is really solid. The actors are great. Like, everybody involved wanted to make a good movie, and then the higher-ups just, I don't think they knew what they wanted to do. The producers were just making it really difficult, and some of the higher ups beyond that at Fox were just, I don't think they really entirely knew what they wanted to do, and were just thinking they could change things on the fly. I think what we ended up with is still entertaining. I think the producer's cut is a little closer to what it would have been, but that movie, there's so many different scripts out there. There's the William Gibson script. There's so many variations of what the film could have been, and it's no surprise that it ended up kind of being all over the place. I like it a lot. I think that it's still good for what it is, but I think like we almost could have gotten greatness if they would have just left the director alone.
The next one we'll talk about, this is the one I was sure was going to be Peter's pick. Universal Soldier.
I love Universal Soldier. Van Damme was like really hot in being like a big action guy, so I just kind of considered that to be like sort of a big movie.
I recently rewatched Universal Soldier a couple of months ago. It all holds up for me until the ending. The third act reeks of reshoots. Like, all of a sudden they're building this plot line with Jerry Orbach, and then, oh yeah, he's a traitor, and the whole third act, the last 20 minutes, all feel like reshoots. And I think that's when the movie fell apart. I was really into Universal Soldier until the third act. It screams of, we don't know what we're doing!
That's entertaining. It's a very entertaining movie.
Yeah, it's like, I think that maybe if there were reshoots, I don't know, I never really looked that far into it. It's just they maybe it didn't have enough action in it at the end or something, but the whole movie, there's so much action, and it's putting Dolph Lundgren and Van Damme, pitting them against each other. They played off each other so well when Van Damme was just enormous. It's a great movie. It's a lot of fun. It's a great idea. It's good. I don't know. I think even if there were reshoots, I still enjoy the hell out of it for what it is.
We're going to gloss over Fortress because we just talked about that earlier in the year in our prison episode. But then what about Fern Gully, The Last Rainforest? I personally kind of enjoy the movie. It's not subtle. It has a level of subtlety that Jordan Peele has in his movies, which is like a sledgehammer to the forehead with its message. But I kind of enjoy Fern Gully for what it is. Maybe because I was still in high school and I went to see it because Christian Slater's in it and I always like Christian Slater, but I'm not going to bitch about Fern Gully.
Fern Gully's good. I watched that one a lot on VHS when I was a kid with my friends and stuff. I've always enjoyed it. I didn't realize it was from 92, but that's definitely a good pick, I would say. It's well animated. Its heart is in the right place as far as the story goes. And of course, James Cameron went on to rip it off for Avatar, among other things.
Fern Gully was a good way of doing an animated film with a message that didn't beat you about the head with the message. It's like, okay, it's there. It's not the whole thing is the message. So it's because they end up a lot of times when there's a message in things, they tend to beat you so much with it that it starts to detract from the enjoyment of it. Whereas this, it's like, well, here's the message and here's an entertaining movie to boot.
Well, then what about one of John Carpenter's biggest misfires, Memoirs of an Invisible Man? Okay, I hadn't seen this one for many years. I don't know why, whether I just avoided it, just kept missing it. I finally saw it. Wow, Chevy Chase is brutally miscast in this movie. This movie doesn't even feel like a John Carpenter film. It feels like his name was just slapped on it. The comedy doesn't work. The action doesn't work. The screenplay feels like it's the first draft they're shooting. It also feels like Chevy Chase, as he's known to do, was probably the one actually calling all the shots. Memoirs of an Invisible Man might be one of John Carpenter's worst films, not counting The Ward.
I love the movie.
Of course you do.
My problem is, I agree, I think that Chevy Chase is the wrong person for the role. However, I think that under Carpenter's direction, I think it still ends up being a very good movie. It feels kind of noirish. It's just, the effects are on point. Sam Neill is incredible. Like, he overcompensates. It's not that he overcompensates, but he makes up for how much Chevy Chase really isn't the right person. I mean, Daryl Hannah's good. Everything in the movie is good except for Chevy Chase. Like, he really does feel out of place. But the movie, I think, shoots so well on every other level that I'm willing to kind of overlook that. And considering the fact that there are portions of the film where we can't even really see him, you're just hearing him, so it doesn't really feel quite as much. Because if you could see him, then you'd see how much he's kind of meh-ing his way through some of the lines. I think it's still a very good movie. I like it. I think it's very underappreciated. And I think largely the reason why it's underappreciated is because people just can't deal with Chevy Chase.
I like it. I have not really seen it since I was a fair bit younger, but I remember enjoying it for what it was.
Well, we have now, leave everything we know about this from later, from the hit TV series, the spin-offs, the comics. We have the utter failure that was Buffy the Vampire Slayer. The movie bombed. Well, it didn't bomb, but it wasn't a hit. And Joss Whedon tried to take his name off of it after the fact, which is something that he is known to do. I'm friends with people who did some of the special effects for Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the movie. He was totally into it while they were shooting it and through editing. It was only after critics didn't like it, then, this isn't the movie I wanted to make. This isn't the movie. Jesus. No, I know he didn't direct it, but he, you know, produced it and he was heavily involved. So leaving aside what we know from down the line, the movie doesn't work. Buffy the Vampire Slayer is a Saturday Night Live sketch drug out to 90 minutes. This would have worked as like a 9-minute SNL sketch. It does not work as a 90-minute movie.
Buffy's pretty terrible. The show is a lot better. I always thought the movie was really hokey and just dumb and fell flat in a lot of ways. Rutger Hauer was probably 10 years too late to play Dracula. We had, instead of getting Blade Runner Rutger Hauer, we got Booze Bloat 90s Rutger Hauer.
I like it. It is completely subpar compared to the TV series. Paul Reubens is terrific. Some of the jokes land really well. I think Christy Swanson is going all in on the character. The concept of it, I think, was very solid. And what I would come to know as Joss Whedon's earmarks of writing, it had little things here and there that I thought didn't work quite as well. But the end scene with the prom and all that, I think, is really good. I think that overall, It's entertaining. I think it could have been a lot better. And I also think that because of the TV series, we're seeing how much better was. You know, it's like, okay, well, the TV show is really, regardless, not saying what Joss Whedon was in or not, but the TV series ended up being vastly superior and really is like what it should have been. And I think if the movie was more in line with how the TV show was, it probably still wouldn't have been a hit, because I think that it would have been too much ahead of its time. I don't think it's nearly as bad as Josh is making it out to be. But then again, that's everything.
I love Clive Barker. I never got into Candyman. I don't dislike the movie. Candyman never did anything for me. I've never seen the sequels. I've only seen the first one. Candyman it's just a movie that came out in 1992 for me, and that's it.
Really? Candyman is awesome. It's got some savage moments in it. Like, you don't really expect to see a kid get castrated in a movie, even in a horror film. Like, there's some really just brutal moments in that film. Tony Todd is amazing. The movie has this great dark vibe to it. And so many foreboding moments. Like, I consider Candyman a classic. It's a genre classic.
Yeah, I'm with Peter. Like, Tony Todd is just incredible in the film, and it just has this very foreboding, heavy feeling to it. It's a really good, different sort of slasher. The aesthetic of it, of being like, in the slums and the bees and everything, it's very well done.
It felt very real. Like, when they're, especially when the characters that live more kind of in the city, the nicer area, are going into the slums, and it's like you get this vibe that something bad is going to happen. It won't even necessarily be Candyman himself, but they might just get jumped by somebody randomly.
Yeah, that was the thing. It was like, you could get killed by Candyman, or you could get killed by a junkie, or you could get killed by just some crazy person, and it just, so it made it very much more dangerous.
Yeah, like anybody that's walked through, like, a bad neighborhood in the middle of the day, or when it's getting dark, like, you just get this sense of danger, like something might happen to you, and it's very relatable. The movie depicts it in a very real kind of way.
Now, the sequels did drop off time after time, but the original still stands very, very well on its own.
Then there's Bram Stoker's Dracula, which I saw in the theater 7 times. Do I need to explain how much I loved this movie despite Winona Ryder and Keanu Reeves' accents?
Did you hear what Francis Ford Coppola said about Keanu? As they were shooting, he kind of regretted casting him because he was like, oh wow, he really isn't a very good actor for a movie like this, but he's so nice, I can't get rid of him.
Oh.
He was like, I can't, he's just such a good guy. Sounded a bit different to him when they were casting, but then when they were actually doing the scenes and he was interacting with people, he was like, oh no, oh no.
And then there's Winona Ryder overacting to a degree where I'm surprised the sets were still standing. Take me away from all this death! It's like, okay, pull it, okay, Winona, pull it back. You're not this kind of an actress, Winona.
She needed to dial it back about -3, and Keanu needed to dial it up by about +3. Find like kind of a middle ground.
But then also you've got Gary Oldman and Anthony Hopkins. You're never going to act better than those two in a movie
exactly.
Together.
It's sort of an unfair challenge, and they're both, oh, they're awesome. Like,
they're both
Gary
Oldman's
fantastic as Dracula. Anthony Hopkins is perfect as Van Helsing. And that movie I consider to have some of my favorite practical effects in any movie. Like the monsters in it, the set design, the lighting, the music, just on a technical scale, it's as perfect a movie as like Terminator 2 is.
Did you ever see the effect of how they did the book with the train? Phenomenal!
Crazy, it's so good.
I thought that was like a superimposed vision, but no, it was, they were at a book and they had a miniature train go. That
it was forced
just,
perspective.
It was forced perspective. It was incredible. It was so well cool. Done. But yeah, they did some amazing stuff with that. That movie was one where directing, aesthetics, everything was firing on all cylinders. You had Anthony Hopkins and Gary Oldman just killing it. And Keanu, I think, was trying really hard, and
yeah,
I love the guy.
You can't really blame him too much. He was very, very out of his element at this time. Like, he was just coming off movies like Bill and Ted, and what else did he do at that time?
Point Break.
Point Break, yeah.
And he did that one, what was it? Permanent Record, the suicide movie. So, I think that him now could probably pull it off better. But,
shit,
you know,
he could play Van Helsing now.
Play Van Helsing, there you go.
You guys also gotta remember, one of the things that made this movie, as much as everything else is good, that score.
Oh god, yeah.
Oh yeah.
Just the opening scene with Dracula when he's more Vlad the Impaler, when he's just, well, impaling people, and just the aesthetics of all the people on pikes and the music that's playing and him just like,
and that armor,
drenched in blood, and that suit is just, it's amazing.
No, I'm going to disagree with you. I'm going to say the chase scene when they're racing against the sun, that beautiful orange dusk lighting with the just beautiful score from like Wolitik Alar, or however you pronounce his name. I can't even pronounce his name. Like I said, I saw this in the theater 7 times. Seeing that on the big screen, man, that was
just
fantastic.
Now we just need Cecil to be like, no, actually, it's this scene, and then we just be like, can't we just f***ing say the whole movie is like amazing?
Yeah, the whole movie is amazing. I think the girl who played Lucy, Sadie Frost, I feel like she would have been a better for Winona Ryder's, like if the two of them would have swapped, I think that might have worked a little bit better, but she had the hair that went better for the role of Lucy, and so I don't know, like I wonder if the casting of that, if it was like, okay, I want Gary Oldman and Anthony Hopkins, and they're like, okay, you can have that, but you gotta have Winona Ryder and Keanu Reeves, it's like...
It's actually the other way around.
Really?
Winona Ryder is the one who got this movie made.
Well, she was a pretty hot name at that moment.
She was a big ticket at the time.
Yeah, man. So she was calling the shots. You can, in some of the behind the scenes on the DVDs, you can see some of the frustration between her and Coppola. While she may not be credited as a producer, she essentially was. was.
For certain parts of the film, absolutely she's on point. I think she's very, very good at the scene where she first meets Dracula, at the little shop. Like
the Nickelodeon.
Like, she looks very much the part.
There's she just overacts some, a little bit, but I don't think she's as bad as how Josh describes it. Like, I think Keanu Reeves was a lot worse in it than she was.
And I think Cary Elwes nailed it. I think Cary Elwes, he was great as always as Homewood. Yeah.
If anything, he might have actually been better in Keanu's role. Cause he's just, that guy's a great actor.
Oh, like, dude, he's so underrated.
He's too old. He was too old for that. But then we also can't forget Tom Waits. We can't also forget Tom Waits eating bugs.
Oh, yeah.
As Renfield.
And Monica Bellucci is one of the brides.
There you go. This next one I want to skip over because even though Peter wasn't on the show yet, Cecil and I have talked endlessly about Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth, which I think is one of the worst films I've ever seen. Recently rewatched it a few months ago. I actually think I hated it more on the rewatch than I did when we did the retrospective a few years ago.
It's still the not movie's the worst incompetent. Hellraiser franchise,
yeah,
though.
It's not one of the worst movies ever. It's one of the, like, worst. It's not even the worst in the Hellraiser series. Like,
but it's so bad, it pisses me off.
Well, everything pisses you off.
And probably the most dated movie from not even just 1992, the 1990s, Lawnmower Man. I'm of two minds of Lawnmower Man. I enjoy it for what it is, but after seeing the director's cut, I totally understand why critics hated what was released in theaters. This is one of those movies that, it's like Terminator 2, loved it theatrically. And then I saw the director's cut and I said, I can never watch that theatrical cut again. The theatrical cut is garbage compared to the director's cut. Lawnmower Man, theatrically, I understand why people hated it. Cause that is a garbage cut and I didn't like it the first time. And then I picked up at the time, the director's cut VHS. This is a totally fucking different film.
They had their 20 minute opening that was removed.
Exactly. But I mean, Cecil, so you understand what I mean. These are two different films that are just the same film, aren't they?
Yeah. And it always bothers me. People don't, not everybody, but I'm saying people, plural, just in general. A lot of people don't understand the point when there's a director's cut, because studios kind of water that down because they have a tendency of, you know, oh, the unrated cut. And people think that, like, that is the director's cut. Like, certain movies, the director had his vision and the studio wanted to cut out, you know, to get more showings in the theater at the time. Well, if this is a 2-hour movie and we cut it down to 90 minutes, well, we can show it X amount more times in the theater. And this is a case of where they cut out the whole 20 minute opening. They cut out other little chunks here and there and truncated the story to a degree where I still kind of liked it, but it felt empty. And then you see the director's cut and you're like, okay, this is the entire story that we should have gotten in the first place. So that always bothers me. And then you mention to people and they're like, oh, well, now I have to watch a movie I don't like. I have to watch a movie now. It's longer. And it's like, no, it'll change your mind.
It's a different film.
It's a different version of it.
It's like, you know, it's like Reindeer Games.
Exactly.
Your review of Reindeer Games made me want to go back and watch the director's cut, and I was incredibly happy that I did. It's a way better movie.
It is. Thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, a lot of people have said that with Blair Witch
Peter.
2, with their seeing the film as it was supposed to be.
Exactly. I agree with everything you guys said. The director's cut is like, it's a different movie, yet it's the same movie, but it's a better version of it.
But we also can't dance around the fact that that movie has aged horribly, though.
It's kind of cute in the same way like the future gazing of Johnny Mnemonic was. Like, they were so off with the prediction, but it's still, like, aesthetically cool.
But with this, it's like, if they tried to make this stuff look realistic, it probably would have aged worse. But
yeah,
because they went with, like, this bizarre, candy-coated, overly colorful versions of games and stuff that they were doing, and Job at the end, I think it works. It doesn't bother me as much as some other movies talking about the future and they're showing, like, oh, this is what video games are going to be like, and they're so bad and so dated. This, like, it didn't bother me nearly as much. And because Pierce Brosnan is doing such a good job, and the whole idea of it is great. And Jeff Fahey is doing a phenomenal job of playing a mentally handicapped guy who becomes a genius. I think he does a really good job of going from one end of the spectrum all the way to the other, and you don't feel like it's getting hokey.
I don't know what to think of Pet Sematary 2. Oh,
I love Pet Sematary 2. I forgot I it think came it's out a, in 92.
It's a terrible
Edward Furlong
film.
Is awesome in it.
It's yeah. poorly... Edward Furlong is terrible
no,
in this.
Oh, no, he's Clancy not. Brown.
Clancy Brown is fine. Okay, Anthony Edwards and Edward Furlong both look like they don't want to be in this movie. Actually, Edward
oh,
Furlong...
God, I will bite you.
Edward Furlong looks like he's awesome. Confused. He looks like he doesn't even know what he's saying in most of these scenes. This movie
is... That's how
I
feel with you sometimes. Just confused. Don't know what you're saying sometimes. Watch Pet Sematary 2. You'll have a great
I don't
time.
Like the first Pet Sematary, but Pet Sematary 2 almost seems like it's satirizing the first movie, but it doesn't know how to do satire.
No, it's just a sequel and they went kind of a different direction with it.
A different as in retarded.
Oh, f*** you.
They just went nuts with the idea, and yeah. I liked it that they went nuts with it, because that's kind of how you should do a sequel. You're going to take things and go a little bit crazy with it. Don't just rehash the first movie. Nuts with it, and had a lot of fun. And I think that, I think it was good. Clancy Brown was great as just a nut.
Well, and then we talked about Sleepwalkers in our Stephen King retrospective, so I don't want to really spend any time on that. We all know our opinions on that. But we do need to talk about one of the biggest, what the f*** was that films of 1992, Free Jack.
Oh, in God, Free Jack.
In theory,
Wait,
this movie should have worked.
Estevez, he's a NASCAR player that gets transported into the future because Anthony Hopkins wants to steal his body.
Yeah,
more or
something
less, like
yeah.
that, and then Mick Jagger is an enforcer. Yes,
that is I love Free Jack.
Weird movie. It's kind of cyberpunk-ish. The plot is really strange. Like, why would he be a car race driver? They just went with that for like his
well,
backstory.
Because,
I like well, no, it though. I honestly think it's a really entertaining movie.
What they did was they would take your body, like yeah. there were cases of where somebody died and the body was just destroyed in the wreckage. And so they didn't want to change, you know, they couldn't change the past. So they would take the body and transport it into the future and give it to these rich people who were implanting their consciousness into it. Well, what happened was got brought into the future, but escaped before they had a chance to wipe his memory. And so he's trying to figure out why he's there. And he really was supposed to be dead. Because he originally died in the car crash.
Well, yeah, and then they kind of stopped time or whatever to take him out of that moment, and the car blows up, so it looks like there's nothing left of him.
And then they bring him into the future, and they're going to give him, you know, put him into put Anthony Hopkins' brain into him. Yes. And he's still chasing after Rene Russo, who's still really hot, you know, 10 years later or whatever. The world really
it might have been
kind
like 20 years later.
Was it 20 years? I don't remember. It's been a while.
Pretty, like, far into the future, yeah.
It's a bad movie. Just leave it at that.
Oh, shut up. Shut up.
Guy's All right, well, favorite movie is Flash Gordon. Shut your mouth.
Well, then let's talk about some of the direct-to-video movies from 1992, because we've got some really good stuff. We got, even though we didn't get it in America at the time, we've got Godzilla versus Mothra, the 1992 version, obviously. We've got Scanners 3, which again, Cecil and I have had a long discussion about in our Scanners retrospective.
Which one is that? Is that Scanner Cop, or is that the...
No,
no Scanner Cop is 4.
Okay. Scanners 3 is the one with the evil chick.
Where she's able to scan people
through
television.
Are they in like Thailand at some point in that one?
Yes.
Yes, okay. All right, I've seen Scanners 3. Pretty forgettable.
And then there's stuff like Full Moon Seed People, which is Charles Band saying, hey, I can do Invasion of the Body Snatchers on no budget. And then you go, actually, no, you can't, Charlie.
Meatballs 4.
I'm not talking to you anymore.
Oh, shut up.
I love Trancers, and I liked Trancers 2. I fucking love Trancers 3. Trancers 3 is the best of all of the sequels. I think Courtney Joyner did a great job on this one. I love Shark. I love Garrick from Deep Space Nine as the villain. Trancers 3 is freaking amazing.
Trancers 3, like Puppet Master 3, is pretty much regarded as the best of the series. But I have a similar thing with, for me, like, Trancers 2 was my introduction to Trancers, therefore I love it. Trancers 3 is the better movie, but I just love Trancers 2. Same thing, Trancers, or Puppet Master 2, I love, even though Puppet Master 3 is the better movie. But yeah, Trancers 3 is so amazing. Like, they really just nailed everything in that. It's so good.
Oh, I agree. Trancers 3 is awesome. It was definitely, because I had remembered seeing 2 and being a little bit underwhelmed by it, and then I feel like 3 hit the mark a little bit better.
And then you have something like, I really enjoyed Waxwork. Waxwork 2 seems like all of the rejected ideas for the first film when they said, just whatever, put them into a movie. Waxwork 2, it's a glorious train wreck, but it's a fucking train wreck of a film. I almost can't even describe Waxwork 2 Lost in Time. You kind of have to see this and go, what the fuck was that?
I like Waxwork 2. I think it's,
of course you do.
It is kind of a mess of ideas. It's a fun mess of ideas.
We talked about Bruce Campbell with Army of Darkness. We got Mind Warp this year.
Yes.
Mind Warp. Now, I like all three of the Fangoria films. Mind Warp is easily the best of them, although I really do like Children of the Night and Severed Ties as well. Mind Warp's a weird one because it's trying to be both sci-fi and horror, and I don't think it nails the sci-fi part of that right because the ending comes across as sort of a cheat. I know it's set up earlier. The ending kind of pissed me off about this one. I felt I was cheated at the end of this one.
No, I don't know. It was kind of like, oh, but then it made sense within the context of the film. It didn't bother me all that much, but it had all my favorite things. It had, you know, it's post-apocalyptic. You had Bruce Campbell. You had Angus Scrimm. You had cannibalism. You had toxic mutants. It's such a neat little film. And I've loved it ever since I first saw it.
Absolutely awesome film. Very fun. Perfect as far as like describing what a genre film should be. Really good.
I've always loved Bad Channels. It's not good in the traditional sense because the plot makes no sense. Bad Channels is so goddamn fun. Bad Channels is what a 90s full moon movie should feel like. I love Bad Channels.
That one I haven't seen. I've seen the trailer and it looks really fun, so that's one that I'm still meaning to check out, but it looks really cool.
Bad Channels may be my favorite full moon movie of all time. It's hilarious, it's fun. Everybody you can tell is enjoying themselves. All the music is cool and different in a very 90s way, like these are very 90s bands.
Oh god, the music is so early 90s.
Oh, it's so 90s, but it's so great. You know, Charlie Spradling is, I'm wondering why though, it always kind of bugged me when they did the spinoff, they did Dollman vs. Demonic Toy.
Yeah, it was Dollman vs. Demonic Toys. They changed the character for some reason.
They changed the character. They got, because Bunny didn't want to come back. I think Bunny quit acting after that. But, so they brought in the nurse. And it was kind of odd to me that it was like they went with the nurse and didn't go with like Charlie Spradling or somebody who was
It was one of those things like The Howling 2 where they want that they, you had to have seen the previous movie, but they were also hoping you didn't remember the previous movie too.
Right. But they made such a big deal about it, you know, being Bunny that still stayed small. And then, you had,
Brick Bardo.
Brick Bardo. I'm like Jack Death. No, Tim Thomerson. No, Brick Bardo. You had Brick Bardo going in and he's like, hey, I heard about this tiny woman. And, it ends up being, you know, not Bunny. It ended up being the nurse, and the nurse did a good job, but now we're going completely off subject. But Bad Channels is just, it's great. They defeat the aliens with disinfectant. And, Martha Quinn is even having a good time, even though I know that she's kind of difficult to work with, but she always gave off that cutesy persona, but I know a lot of people that actually know her personally and she's not a nice person, sadly. It's a fun movie. I adore it dearly.
I want to skip over Nemesis because I truly intend to do a Nemesis retrospective at some point because we've got a Cyborg retrospective coming up in a few weeks and the Nemesis and Cyborg movies are connected and we'll get into all that down the line. But Nemesis came out this year. Great movie. Oliver Grunier. Now, we talked about all three of us were there for the Amityville retrospective. Do we need to talk about It's About Time, other than the fact that, Cecil got to see What's-Her-Face touching herself?
But she didn't get Megan Ward. She didn't get naked, though. I think she was naked, but it was an obvious body double. Like, it wasn't even the same skin color. Like, that was how bad it was.
We also had in 1992. Now, I personally enjoy Basket Case 3. Frank Hettenlotter does not. And I'm not sure, I've never understood why he said he wishes he hadn't made that movie.
I love the whole series. The movies just get weirder and weirder.
Yeah, I mean, okay, it's the weakest of the three official Basket Case movies. Cause yes, Belial, you know, the brothers do show up in Frankenhooker and Bad Biology. So there are other movies in the Hettenlotter verse. I enjoyed Basket Case 3, honestly.
It's very fun. Certainly better than Hellraiser 3.
Well, and then we got Demonic Toys, which we've also kind of talked about, which I think is, it's a weak movie. It comes across as a Puppet Master knockoff. Demonic Toys would stand on its own if the Puppet Master movies were not also a Full Moon movies. This feels like just, you know, this feels like the ninjas in Mortal Kombat. Just palette swap them and they're new characters now. I don't think that works, you know?
It's fun. It's a fun movie.
Now, I know Cecil loves this movie, but I could never get into Dr. Giggles. I did not like this movie at all.
Oh, come on. Larry Drake is just owning it. He was any other actor I don't think could have pulled it off. Like, that movie I think would have been a complete abysmal failure if not for Larry Drake. And that's not bad mouthing the directors, the people that worked on the film, but there are some phenomenal shots in the film. But really what makes it is Larry Drake. He's incredible. He does such a great job on that. Oh, I love it to bits.
What about The Gate 2, the movie no one asked for a sequel of?
It's all right. It's fun. You had, Pamela Adlon, whatever her original, was Adlon her first last name or was that her married last name?
Who cares?
Anyway, she's really good in it. Fun way to retell the story, but do it in a different way. I don't mind The Gate 2 at all.
It's okay. It's a passable sequel.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about the movie nobody saw because the movie didn't even come out in 1992, even though it was supposed to. Didn't come out till later on video. Highway to Hell, the Christy Swanson, Chad Lowe movie. This movie.
Oh, that one's awesome. That's with CJ Graham, the Jason Part 6 guy as the hell cop.
And it also has Lita Ford as a prostitute in hell, Ben Stiller as a chef Stiller. In hell for... Gilbert Gottfried plays Hitler, for God's sake! Highway to Hell is so fun, and it clearly had a huge budget, and I've heard differing stories, that's why I don't know what actually happened. Didn't come out. It had like two or three local screenings, and then sat on a shelf until it sort of escaped to video and late night cable. Highway to Hell is a freaking fun as hell movie, no pun intended.
I think probably the thing was people weren't really into Chad Lowe being the hero, if that makes sense. Like he's, the movie's great. I love it. The hell cop is awesome.
He has handcuffs. They're actual hands.
They're actual hands. They played they had so much fun with the whole hell cop thing. Maybe with a better lead, they might have been able to get it into theaters and it might have been at least a modest hit. But a movie like this always seems to me like it would have been genre fare that is just asking to be a cult hit. Like, I could never see a movie like Highway to Hell being a blockbuster. It's so far removed from what the mainstream would be into.
Then there's House 4, which we dealt with in our House retrospective, the second House movie that was not a House movie. then there is Murderer John Landis's Innocent Blood, which I think is a better idea than a film. The whole thing, the mob and vampires and having a lighthearted sort of tone, all on paper works. Nothing in the movie works. I think the screenplay is garbage. The direction is lame. Nothing in Innocent Blood works for me, but on paper it should. And that's what pisses me off about Innocent Blood.
Okay, well, you're wrong. And I think the sooner you realize that, then the better.
Maniac Cop 3, which again, we did our Maniac Cop retrospective. Man, we've already talked about a lot of these movies, strangely enough, in past episodes.
A bit of a Franken film. Robert Forrester's very good at it, but it's still a very, very enjoyable sequel.
Then we have Full Moon's Netherworld, Oh, I remember this one. This was one of the first Full Moon movies where I was kind of like checking my watch going, this movie's only 80 minutes. Why does this feel so goddamn long? Netherworld just was boring to me.
Great idea, just flawed execution.
Yeah, I like David Schmoller. This one just didn't work, man. His direction was just, I keep feeling like they forgot to edit the movie, you know?
I want to revisit
it. It's still only 80 minutes.
I want to revisit it. I haven't seen it in a very long time, but yeah, I always remember it plodding along.
Then there's Prom Night 4. I do want to do a Prom Night retrospective at some point because, man, the sequels to Prom Night is just, it is what it is. The sequels go batshit off the rails, though. The Prom Night movies might be a fun retrospective.
Oh,
at some
I love
point.
The Prom Night movies. That would, I'd be more than up for doing that one. Those are some crazy films for sure.
Yeah, they just go nuts. Like, the first one is a pretty, I don't want to say
the first
one
was just a slasher movie.
The first one's a slasher. After that, they just go supernatural nuts.
Has anyone but me seen Reanimator Academy?
What?
No.
Reanimator Academy, it's a movie.
Reanimator Academy, no.
Then there's Stepfather 3, which I did not like. I liked Stepfather, didn't like any of the sequels. So Stepfather 3, and I think this is the first one where they had a different actor and they just decided, you know what, we're just gonna say he got facial surgery because that explains why he doesn't look like Terry O'Quinn anymore. And you roll your eyes going, if you're not gonna take this seriously, why should I?
I have not seen Stepfather 3. I've only seen the original and the remake.
I know the director. I should ask him what happened.
They just couldn't get the same actor. That's just what it was.
Pretty much. They couldn't afford Terry. Yeah, they couldn't get Terry O'Quinn anymore, but, I'll see what he says.
Now, I know Cecil's gonna have something to say about To Sleep with a Vampire because it's a Charlie Spradling film.
Oh my god. It's a Charlie Spradling nudathon. She plays a stripper who, is more or less accosted by a vampire. It's actually a remake. A lot of people-
Of a movie from just the year earlier called Dance of the Dead!
Right! Which, it's like, wow, they wasted no time whatsoever getting that remade. I like both of them in different ways. I'm not gonna say that it's a good movie, but it's an interesting movie. The concept is there. It's kinda hard for me to believe. I had a hard time, I still do, with, Scott Valentine as the vampire because he will forever be the boyfriend from, Family Ties.
He was really weak, yeah.
He just was not believable. So that's the thing, like, I like the other one, because the vampire in the, Dance with the Dead was more believable. But with this, I thought Charlie Spradling gave a much more grounded performance, and...
Okay, now, tell me if I'm wrong. Dance of the Dead felt like a horror film. To Sleep with a Vampire feels like a Skinamax version of a horror film, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It really does. There's so many just sex scenes in it that really didn't need to be there. But I will say they are visually pleasing. Like there's the one where they're on the light up stage and they're having sex and it looks really good and it's lit very well. But, yeah, it feels like it was, one of those Skinamax horror film, you know, titty movies.
And strangely enough, for those who haven't seen Dance of the Dead or To Sleep with a Vampire, we're not kidding that it's a remake of a film from the year earlier. Roger Corman made both, and they used the exact same script. He wasn't happy with how Dance of the Dead turned out, so he literally just gave the script to another director, to, in this case, Adam Friedman, gave it to him and said, here, go make this again.
Just so people
don't think we're being, you know, snarky when we say it's a remake from a movie the year earlier. It literally is.
And it's funny, a lot of people, like, you have some people that know about Dance of the Dead, you have some people that know about To Sleep with a Vampire, but there's not a lot of people that know both exist. Probably because they're very low on the Cormanosphere. Like, at the time, Corman movies weren't blowing up like they were in the 70s and 80s. They don't, you know, it's not Piranha.
Well, and then to end out this year, we have the, at this point, relatively still good Witchcraft 4. Cause if anyone has seen where the Witchcraft movies go, this is still a high quality movie, even though Virgin Heart is really bad.
Speaking of horror movie, softcores. That's where they went.
If somebody would pay for it and do it on Patreon, I would actually make us do a Witchcraft retrospective. All 16 movies. They're up to 16 now.
Oh my God.
They released three of them in 2018.
They're just, they have the license and they're just riding that out as much as they can. So, I mean, but somebody has to be watching them if they're still making them.
Idiots like us.
Idiots like us, that's true. I wonder if there's a, if they have a box set of like all the movies.
I don't think they can because they're, I think like the first too six many. Are owned by a different, I think there's like three different companies that keep just transferring the name. So I think this is one of those ones where a box set, never gonna happen. And even then, besides the three idiots on this show, who would buy it? So to wrap up, 1992. What do you think of 1992 for genre films?
Fantastic.
Is this a strong
year for genre
year
films? Really good. I think we've got some very notable ones, particularly you got Army of Darkness, which is just one of the biggest genre cult films ever made. So I think 1992, very successful year for these kind of movies.
We did not talk about Livewire, the If You Drink Water, You Explode movie, which, come on. A movie is just tons of fun. Christian DeGay directed it as well. And Pierce Brosnan, Ron Silver. You have an exploding clown in the film. And we did not talk about one of my all-time favorite comedies, Brain Donors, which was like a modern-day Marx Brothers film where you had...
Oh, there's a reason I forgot about that movie, man. That movie was... I felt like I had donated my brain after watching that. That movie is so not funny.
Oh.
It was physically painful to watch how not funny Brain Donors was.
Oh, you're an idiot. Dude, Brain Donors is hilarious. So yes, so I am bringing it up. Everybody, if you're into like Marx Brothers style humor and you want to see John Turturro do an incredible-
If you want to see John Turturro completely debase himself,
oh no, he's having a
no.
Great
that's time. What the Transformers movies are for.
I felt bad. I'm like, oh, John Turturro, you're so much better than this. But yeah, Brain Donors is hilarious.
No, it isn't.
Oh, shush.
So where can people find Mr. Shush, who doesn't know comedy, Cecil himself?
I will never not like. I recognize that my sense of humor is a little askew, but I do think
you
that
think
I...
Repossessed is funny. That's how wrong you are.
There are lots of people who think Repossessed is funny. Repossessed is very funny. You could find me being very funny over at goodbadflix.com, as well as GoodBadFlix on YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, and 1201beyond.com.
Where can we find Peter all up there in Canada, which it's like Canadian summer this week, isn't it?
Yeah, just this week only. And then we go back to just finger-crushing blizzards. You can find me all bunkered up on Twitter at Cinematica, on Facebook, The Cinemasochist, YouTube, The Cinemasochist, on 1201beyond.com, with this show and many other fine programming on Patreon, of course, at Cinematica. Money, give me money, that's it.
You can find me at 1201beyond.com. Contact this show at 1201beyond@gmail.com. Guys, try to be a cut above. Keep one foot in the gutter, one fist in the gold. Have a good night.
Hi, kids. It's the Captain Happy Show, starring me, Captain Happy. Let me get out my magic mirror. I see Bobby. I see Susie. I see Billy.
Time of season, I'm always happy for no reason. The big red sun shining down on me, the sweet little bells of a melody. I love to run up to the hills and tippy toe through the daffodils. Mr. Butterfly, will you be my friend? Let me capture you in my little net.
Radiodrome is a 1201 Beyond production. Find it and other great content at 1201beyond.com.